Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. Bruno is the new Lorraine because he doesn't seem to turn up to his own show anymore. But that means it's me, it's Alex coming at you again. I'm pleased to welcome Pat back to the podcast as always as well. How are you doing over there in sunny Florida?
Doing well, doing well. We got a nice little federal holiday, so school's off, so I got the day off and ready to talk this club with you guys like I love to do.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, for those who don't know, we normally record at like 10 UK time. I have to be in the office the day after, so it sucks for me. So, Pat, I'm very glad that you could jump on at a normal time for us in the UK today. So much appreciated. And pleased to welcome back Max to the pod as well. How are you doing, mate?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. I mean, not fantastic after the result of the weekend, but, you know, as good as I can be. Yeah, lots to dive into.
I'm quite lucky. I'm going off to Oslo end of this week for the long weekend. So I'm kind of hoping I can just put football off my mind and basically use it as a way to unwind from all that crap at the weekends. But it wasn't all doom and gloom. Max, you were at Doncaster. Obviously a great result for Palace, and then an amazing draw as well to pick out our rivals Millwall out of all teams and set up a really, really tasty South London derby on home turf. So let's just get your thoughts first of all on the game. I mean, you were there. What did you make of the atmosphere and what did you make of the performance?
Yeah, I thought we were decent is probably all I could really say. I thought, yeah, the atmosphere was okay. Where I was sat, there was a few more empty seats. To my understanding, on the other side, it was very, very full, very packed. And when we first went to our seats, the stewards were just saying, oh, sit anywhere. So on TV, it looked like the left side was a lot more full, but we were still pretty loud. And in terms of the performance, I just think we didn't really get out of first gear. But then again, we didn't need to. Like, we were playing a League Two team. We once again fielded a very strong team, for saying it was Doncaster, which I'm not against, because obviously things we'll go into later on about, you know, this, our focus is now on the cup run. We've not much to play for in the league. But yeah, I was very happy with the lineup. Apart from, I was slightly confused why SA didn't start and he went for Kamada instead. Personally, I would have liked to have seen SA in that fixture, especially from him coming from that EFL kind of setup. I don't know, I just thought the fixture probably suited him a bit more than Kamada, but obviously he did come on and he was all right. And to be fair to Kamada, I don't think he played badly. I thought he was okay. Having Wharton back was amazing. Really, really showed his quality against a side like Doncaster. And another thing as well was the fact we, for the first time, used the opportunity to bring Mitchell off. And I just thought that's something that completely changes our team moving forward. I mean, for the rest of the season, definitely. Because in a fixture like that, you know, realistically, we weren't in danger at halftime. So to bring Chilwell on, who I thought looked quite positive, happy all around. And yeah, we probably got the best draw that we could have got, really.
There's plenty of positives from that. I mean, we won't talk too much about the Munoz goal. Really nice to see him back on the score sheet, though, and contributing offensively. I want to talk particularly about Justin Devenny. Of course, he kept his place for Everton. We'll park Everton chat just for now. But obviously missing a huge chance and then scoring one of his own with a fantastic lob. I mean, he was a bit of a surprise inclusion. Maybe that's a stretch for me to say, because I think obviously there are the likes of Kamada and SA and other players that could come in. But, you know, he started. Glasner obviously rates him. Offensively, he's looking very, very sharp. And of course, he got his reward. So just looking specifically at his play, what did you make of it, Max?
Yeah, I thought it was quality. Once again, it was a fixture that allowed Devenny to be himself, with it being Doncaster. And yeah, I thought he's very, I want to use the word like attentive. I just feel like offensively he presses maybe more than others were. Yeah, you mentioned the sitter that he definitely should have buried, but I think he made up for it with that lob. That from where I was sat looked even better than probably what it did from other angles. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Devenny. I know me and Bruno have spoken before about, is there a long-term future for Devenny at Palace? Before, when he first came in for the Eze injury, maybe not. But literally, who knows now? Because every time he puts on the shirt, him kissing the badge and the celebration as well, just his passion for the club. He obviously really feels like he's earned to be there and he's taken this opportunity. So yeah, I'm a big Devenny fan because he's a player that seems to wear the Palace shirt with pride. And I will always give my kudos to those players. So yeah, I'm a big Devanny fan.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, although it was a small cameo, I think there's got to be a bit of a shout out for Mateus Franz, hasn't there? I mean, Bobby couldn't make it today because he's watching him tonight at Sutton when he's taking on Aston Villa in the Youth League. But I mean, how good was it to see him back on the pitch?
Oh, honestly, the ovation that he got was amazing. Where we were sat when Cafora came on, we first thought that Cafora was Francis. So we were like, oh my, oh my, oh my, like we're all getting ready, getting excited. But yeah, he did come on in the end, and he was so determined to touch the ball once he, like, there was one point where we had the throw-in on my near side, and he literally legged it all the way from the other side of the pitch just to get a touch. So yeah, very, very happy to see France are back. And I like the moment with Lacroix at the end, making sure that he got his moment in front of the travelling fans. And I'm just excited to see him back in the Premier League as well. And hopefully he should feature against Millwall as well. That seems kind of the other fixture moving forward that we'll see him in again soon. Providing he, plays all tonight, doesn't get injured. So yeah, really happy to see France are back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been, you think about the last 10 months, let's say, it's been a horrible, horrible spell for him. I mean, having to adjust to a new country at a young age is no easy thing, let alone on the pitch, you know. And to come away with this injury record is obviously seriously, seriously threatening at such a critical juncture in his career. So very, very good to see him back. And I think all these rumours of him being unhappy at the club and it was all a cover for him wanting to go back to Brazil was nonsense. I mean, it's quite clear that from the body language of the players at the end there, as you say, that he's very well loved. I mean, the socials gave it away too. Loads of really good interaction there. So don't get me wrong, França isn't going to be the sort of saviour at the club or anything like that. But I think it's good to see him just being eased back in. And hopefully he touch a lot of words, touch all the trees I've got in my room. He can put all this injury nonsense behind him because if there's anyone who doesn't deserve it, it's him. I think there's still a promising player in there and definitely, definitely keen to see what he can do next. But look, we'll get on to the main event. I think everyone knows Doncaster was quite a tidy performance and we're all buzzing with the draw, some amazing chance, which I can't repeat on the pod because they're not so safe for television, all that jazz. But nonetheless, a very good draw. Lots to look forward to on that front. And the cup run, obviously, we'll touch on later. But we have to talk about Everton. I mean, we just can't beat them. I'm certainly not. I mean, I was there for the Gallagher curler where we did beat them years ago. But beyond that, it feels like we just don't seem to get any luck against the Blues, no matter how well we play. But I'm sure it's a lot more detailed than just some sort of strange curse that have been put on us by the Blues side of Merseyside. So, like, Pat, I'll bring you in because we haven't heard from you yet. I mean, first of all, good to hear from you again, as we mentioned at the start. But let's just talk Everton because, I mean, there's so much to unpack here. But just going into the game, I think, you know, obviously we had the advantage of rest. They had a few key players in Doucouré and Ndiaye suspended. And there's so much that was going our way from the start. But, I mean, it was always going to be a tough test, wasn't it?
It was. We can't understress how important Eze is on the pitch for us, and there's some stuff that I'm going to go into a little bit later that's going to really show that. I think a good place to start and kind of nice segue because we were talking about Devenny, a player who I really like. I truly enjoy his passion and watching him play for us, but he didn't have his best performance against Everton. And when you're playing in the spot that Dabiri Eze is playing in, and you're expected to kind of play to a strong level, we need to see that. And what Devenny did in the first half was not good. He struggled. He had one touch in the opponent's box, zero progressive carries, carries into the opponent's box, one progressive pass, zero passes into the opponent's box, and his passes accumulated to a total of 0.00 expected assists. He just really wasn't into the match, especially from the offensive side of things. And physically, he got bodied a little bit. He was 1 for 6 in duels. He was going against a right back for Everton that I had to check my notes and see what his name was again. Jake O'Brien. He did pretty well in terms of being physical against Devenny. So he didn't have his best performance in the first half. And I have this in huge boldface print in my notes. That is okay. He is a young player. It was his third ever Premier League start. He has 308 total career Premier League minutes. He is not going to be Dabiri Eze right away. He is not going to be a superstar. But he shows passion. He has high football IQ. He's excellent out of possession. Out of possession for a player of his relative inexperience, I think he shows a great, great, great understanding of the game. So I'm not going to sit here and bash the kid, but we do have to talk objectively. And we have to say that I think part of our performance, especially in the first half, where we weren't really seeming to get anything going, weren't seeming to get a lot of chances, is probably because that left attacking mid role was just kind of a black hole.
Yeah, quite telling that we made some, I would say, some pretty progressive substitutions at half time and some forward thinking there from Glasner in terms of taking him off. But yeah, I mean, I won't slate Devenny for the reasons you've just said. I mean, you mentioned Jake O'Brien obviously coming out from our academy. Did you forget that, Pat? I just feel like you did.
Sarcasm. That was sarcasm, guys. That was sarcasm.
Right. Fine, fine. I'm off it today, so maybe that's why. Long day. I've literally come straight from the office. Anyway, not important. Jake O'Brien being 6 foot 6, but extremely physical playing on in that right side. Yeah, always a very tough battle there. But nonetheless, I think he very much got his comeuppance and his chance, of course, to play at Selhurst, Jake O'Brien. But yeah, it was a real shame. But like you say, I think we can only be so critical of Devenny. So let's talk
No,
about
of course.
this. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, and if I can go to the glass half full, which is where I like to be anyway. Obviously, aside from the score line, which we know, and overall duels won, which was a very, very minimal edge to Everton. They had won 53% of duels to our 47%. Outside of those two statistics, and yes, score is the only important one. I know that. You don't need to come and tell me that. Palace were better in every relevant metric. Every relevant metric. XG generated, shots, big chances created, pass accuracy, touches in the opponent's box, tackle win rate, which was an astounding 65%. We went to 65% of tackles attempted, we won to Everton's 30, by the way. And dribble success. We had the fifth most take-ons attempted in 17. 17 take-ons attempted, fifth most in a Premier League match this season for us. Our 10 successful dribbles were the second most in a Premier League match for us this season. And that was really led by Mateta. He was 3 for 4 in his dribbles. And it's what we've been saying all year. Once we get JP back to, full fitness and full confidence, we're going to be a different squad. And we keep seeing that week in and week out because when he's firing, we're always in the match. Aside from a horror communication error by Mitchell and Lerma, and really just a loose ball scramble after a free kick. We didn't, those, that's how they got their goals. We didn't allow many chances. We didn't concede anything. Our defense looked organized and strong as it has been since about October, November now. So you really just take it to those two things and throw in Sar hitting the post in the first half also. And I think those are the factors that we lost the match. We probably were the better team. We certainly deserved at least a point. But, this is a game of fine margins, and those fine margins didn't go our way.
No, you outlined it there, and particularly in that first half, we were so clearly dominant in it from a creative sense, from a possession sense. I mean, it was a very, very encouraging display, and yet it just didn't work out. And then, like you say, just humongous individual error there just cost us so dearly in the end. I mean, let's not pretend Beto's not a man in form, but I mean, one thing I'm pissed off about is that he's getting all the silencer credit when obviously our boy Benteke is by far and away the one who carries that away when it comes to football. But not the point. Obviously, a huge communication error there, as you mentioned. I mean, Tariq Mitchell has already been a man under pressure. He's now got severe competition in Ben Chilwell, who we'll talk about afterwards. What did you make of Tariq Mitchell's game specifically? I mean, it obviously caused a lot of scrutiny, so I'm keen to get your thoughts on that.
When you make a error so egregious and it leads to going down to halftime a goal when you were the better team for the first half, you didn't have a good performance. Chilwell came on and Chilwell showed some things of why he was England's number one left back choice for quite some time when he was healthy, but he didn't play lights out. But as you said, now that there's somebody maybe breathing down Mitchell's back and breathing down his neck, saying I'm coming, we're going to be able to play somebody else beside you, it might motivate him to be a little bit stronger. Because he didn't have a good performance today. His crosses weren't great. He wasn't really getting up the pitch as he should. And that error is that error. I mean, if he doesn't have that error, I'd say he had a pretty average performance, but that error was just egregiously, egregiously, egregiously bad. It cannot happen at that level of football.
But do you not think, Pat, that his reaction to the error was even worse than the error itself? If you watch, he throws the ball and he kind of waves his arm, like classic like Wilf, like throws his arm in the air, and then he's so slow. For me, Mitchell should be bombing it straight down that left-hand side to go and win that ball back. As soon as he'd realized where that ball was going, he should have been bombing it back down. And for me, that was the main taking point from the whole error, was his reaction after. And I don't want to sit here and say, oh, the man doesn't have desire or passion. I do like Mitchell, and he has all those things. Was it a fatigue thing for why he didn't run back? I don't know. I want to get your thoughts on that.
It could be a variety of things, man. I mean, he probably didn't think that Lerma wasn't going to get to the ball. And there was probably some kind of processing thing that turned on that maybe it took him a little bit to realize what just happened. He was maybe in a little bit of shock and awe of what just occurred. But to that point, Lerma still booked his way back. You know, so I'll give you that. When you play in these matches, it's such a bang bang thing that sometimes these things don't register on you. I certainly would have hoped that he would have ran back a little quicker, but you know, the error is the error. He set it up himself, and I don't know if Lerma has a little bit to play too, because maybe Lerma pointed one way and didn't go the way he was going to go. We have no idea what to say, but yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, the bare minimum you can do is hustle and give everything your best. And if you need a break, you got to tell the manager that you need a break. And if he was tired, he's got to let Glasser know. So I can't really defend that now.
Just to come in on that, obviously Chilwell then playing in the well, large chunk of the second half there. I mean, he obviously impressed with a number of creative passes that were shown throughout the match and looked fairly okay in those 1v1 situations, Pat. I mean, let's look at Chilwell more specifically because obviously it's his Premier League debut that he made in that game. What do you think of his overall play, how it differed from Mitchell, and do you think maybe he starts and gets a run going forward?
He's going to start at some point. That's why we got him. I don't think he's going to be the necessarily going to start every match. I don't think Mitchell's necessarily going to start every match. He's probably going to play the hot hand and play who's fit and all that. But I don't want to turn this into burying Mitchell, because it wasn't like Chilwell came on and was Roberto Carlos. You know, he had one pass into the box. It was a good pass, but it was one. He had the same amount of progressive passes received as Mitchell in four. So they're both getting up the pitch and trying to get into advantageous areas pretty equally. He showed, like I said, he showed them some things that reminded us why Ben Chilwell was Ben Chilwell for so long and was such a good player. He's going to get better. He's going to get that rust off, and he's a great option to have. I think he's definitely going to warrant himself a start, if not next match, but certainly very soon down the road. But he didn't blow anybody away. He didn't do amazing things. He didn't have any key passes. He had one pass into the final third. His progressive passes were one. Mitchell actually had more in the first half. He had two. So in terms of playing the ball progressively and getting into spaces, he did better, but slightly. And I think the factor there that you have to take in is that he did slightly better with very little time and experience under his belt this season, where Mitchell's been playing. And we're probably seeing the best of what we can see of Mitchell. Or maybe if we give Mitchell a little bit of a rest, we can actually see what a little bit better of him. But I guess I'm just saying, let's not bury Ty. I know it was a terrible mistake, but this kid has always had passion and always played for Palace. Let's not bury the kid for one mistake. We know he's been fatigued. He hasn't had a sub for 4 years, something like that. So just with a grain of salt, he had a bad performance. Chilwell had a little bit of a better performance, and he's going to be there to offer up competition for him. I think that makes them both better in the long run. So let's just wait and see what happens there and let the cream rise to the top, as they say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bobby on here has said multiple times now it's public that Mitchell has played several spells with injury, minor injuries, admittedly, nothing that's going to be too serious or aggravated, but probably some sort of groin strain or something that, you know, is slightly uncomfortable. The sort of thing that Wharton made under surgery for just to nip in the bud. And simply because you've got no other cover, he's been forced to kind of play through these minor discomforts. And you have to think over the long term that can be detrimental or certainly a risk. So it's good to see that competition. And for what it's worth, if I'm a betting man, I'd probably say Chilwell starts versus Fulham, not so much because of form, but because of just the simple need to give Mitchell a break. But I digress. I think there's a lot to talk about there and a lot to be seen yet with both fullbacks. So definitely interested to see where that one goes. But Max, if I may, I want to kind of get your thoughts on a particular flashpoint. I mean, Match of the Day had a lot to say on this. This was the disallowed goal where Lerma had sort of bundled it home, only for it to be disallowed because it was ambiguous. And that was quite clear. It was ambiguous that the ball may have gone out of play in that situation when De Vinny whips it in. So looking back, it looked like it probably did stay in. But as someone who has to kind of respect the precedence of this, I'm of the opinion that it really just. If it's too unclear at that moment, then I guess they have to divert to the on-field decision. But still, it's one that leaves a bit of taste in the mouth when you look back. So I'll get to the point, Max. Let's just bring you in. What did you think of that flashpoint? Should it have been disallowed? I mean, there's so much we could talk about there with it.
I think it's really interesting because I always try to use this analogy. If that was against us, how would we react? At the end of the day, the linesman's in the best position out of everyone to be able to tell if that ball is in play or not. That's a fact. He's in the best position. That is his job. But what I find most frustrating is So they say that they can't overturn the decision because there's no sufficient evidence to overturn. Well, why? There's no camera angle. Well, what, like, why is there not? That's kind of my main point here. I don't understand why, essentially, we've missed out on a goal because the technology isn't adequate enough to support the decision that it went out of play. I don't know. It's a tricky one. From the angles I've seen, yeah, I don't think it went out of play, and I think it should have been a goal. But once again, the referees are very, very quick to blow, aren't they? Just like with the Eze situation. I know that was slightly different. In that case, he'd actually blown the whistle before the ball had gone in the net, which was just ludicrous. But again, as soon as Lerma didn't even have time to celebrate, as soon as the ball's gone in the net, whistle's gone. And it's like, could they not have let the goal stand? Like, can we not look at it positively? Can we not let the goal stand? Because there's no way that it was that obvious to the linesman. It couldn't have been that obvious if we then can't find a good angle that really proves that it was out of play, nor that it wasn't. I don't know. It's a weird one, but once again, I'll go back to it. If it was given against us, how are we feeling with that one?
It is a tricky one. I'm not going to pretend it was an easy question to throw on one person, 'cause I'll be honest, like, it is a one in 100 situation. We don't see it this often. It just seems to happen to us all the time. Maybe that's recency bias or whatever. But yeah, for what it's worth, I think you make a really good point there about the stopgap to process things, because we don't talk about that enough collectively as football fans, not just in Palace. You're right. There is a positive argument here to say, look, there's been this incident. Take just a split second longer, just take it a few moments longer just to process whether that ball's gone out or not. If there's doubt, you let the goal stand, you flag it to the ref and say, look, VAR needs to check this because it's within the remit of VAR to do so. But when the on-field decision is a very, very instant no, probably based on the lino's feedback, of course, but an instant no, it just takes so much power away from the scorer. It suddenly creates so much ambiguity and the need to kind of provide evidence rather than provide evidence against. It just seems such an absurd way to run a process like that when you're not allowing yourself the time to think properly and you've got the
That's
full
it.
technology.
Because it's not really like the referee was in a position to be able to make that call. He couldn't, he could not, there's no way that he, from where he was stood, there's no way that he could have said in
Oh, no,
confidence
definitely.
that ball has gone out of play. So therefore, we fall to the linesman, who, like I said, did have the best position, but was just so quick to react. Considering if the ball was out of play, we're talking under a second, maybe, that it was out of play. Has he really seen that? And he's been so convinced by what he's seen. I don't know. I mean, clearly he was, but
Pat, I can
yeah.
see you deep in thought. Carrick, jump in, jump in.
For me, we already have the Hawkeye technology on the goal line, right? So why not extend that out down the entire line? And then there's no ambiguity, there's no judgment call. You get a little buzz if it went over the line, it went over the line, done. And I know the argument against that would probably be, oh, well, these things don't happen that often, and that would take a lot of money to put into all the Premier League stadiums. Do we really think the Premier League doesn't have the money to put them in the stadiums? They're spending $4.5 billion every 5 years or so on players. I think they can afford to put that technology in. And yes, it doesn't happen that often, but every point matters in this league when you're talking about clubs like Palace, clubs like who in the past have been in relegation battles. Luckily, we haven't been this year. But 3 points is a big deal. So why not put it in? Why not make it so that you can take a lot of the pressure out of the officials' hands and just have it be an automatic yes, it is, or no, it isn't, done.
I mean, with Hawkeye, let's not forget that Aston Villa arguably should have gone down in something like very, very famous match for all the wrong reasons. But, like you said, we're talking a few hundred thousand pounds here. We're not talking vast sums even then. Whatever it costs, this is a matter of integrity of the sport. And for this to be such a blatant failure to actually clear up this thing is just, it's atrocious for me. But look, we can sit here, and I'm going to do the classic line. We can sit here and moan all day about that decision. Should it have been a goal? I think there's a good case for it, yes, but it didn't go our way. This happens. But equally, Ismaïla Sarr missed a massive sitter and hit the crossbar when he could have slotted it and had the time to do so and failed to show the composure in that situation. Is that a criticism of Sarr? Not really. I'm just saying that this is football. You miss chances and opportunities, and if they come back to bite you, that's your problem at the end of the day. So we can sit here and moan, but we could do this all night, to be honest, so we won't. But I want to just move on from that flashpoint. I mean, we need to talk a bit about the goal. I mean, just briefly, for that we scored. I mean, it was a bit of Bit of a false light in the end, but obviously nice to see Mateta getting a very quick poacher's goal off the back of the break and following some progressive substitutions, as we mentioned earlier. So, Pat, I mean, what did you think of the goal? I mean, what's there to say on that?
A typical in-form Mateta goal where he just has the confidence. He missed that one in the first half, and I think he was like, "All right, that was my one, not again." And he just, great play, great power. I mean, vintage JP's, what we saw all last spring, and what we hope to see more this spring if we're gonna try and make a little bit of a run at this. In terms of those subs that you mentioned, particularly Wharton and Eze. I mean, we talked about Chilwell, and I thought he did well. But Wharton and Eze, I think, changed the game completely. Wharton comes on and in 45 minutes put on a performance that we were used to seeing where he was so progressive and so forward moving. It wasn't passing sideways, wasn't passing backwards. If you look at progressive passes for the entire match, Gahey had 10. That was the most, right? So break that down, 5 per half. In 45 minutes in the second half alone, Wharton had 9. That was second for the club. So 9 in one half is pretty exceptional. Pass into the final third. Gahey again led the club with 10, 5 per half. Wharton had 5 in the second half alone. Key passes, Wharton had the most outside of Eze, two subs that came on in the second half. Eze had 3, Wharton had 2. So those two just came on and they showed why they were so dangerous together last spring. And they showed why we were missing them when we don't have them. And again, Eze just knows where to be on the pitch. He knows how to get himself into attacking places. He only had 33 touches, but 24 of those were in the final third. To compare that to Deveni when he was playing in the first half, he had 26 touches. Only 9 of those were in the final third. So Eze was playing more far forward. He was being more progressive. He was being more attacking, asking more of that defensive back line of Everton. And I think even his presence on the pitch alone, it opens up space for JP. It opens up space for Sarr, Munoz, all our other guys to try and get in these advantageous places to score.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, I was going to say you took the words out of my mouth. You really didn't, because I've never had those numbers to hand. But it was such a breath of fresh air to see two of these essential creative figures back. And I think both at the same time was particularly interesting, just because I think Eze on his own has a tendency to be the sole focus of output. And I think that creates so many problems in terms of being able to double up and mark him out the game. Whereas I think when you have someone like a deeper lying playmaker in Wharton, I think it's so clear to see the impact. So really, really encouraging to see. Obviously, a vintage tap in from JP. That's now 7 in 6 for the Frenchman, by the way. So all of this purple patch nonsense, that's gone. That's really relieving to see. And obviously, I think in terms of depth, I think it was one of the best squads we've had in a long time.
Yeah, it to your point on Eze kind of trying to do too much, it's 100% true. Every season that he's been in the Premier League, he has been one of the best clinical finishers in the Premier League at his position. He's been in the 75th percentile or higher in MPG minus MPXG, which is again a metric that looks at how many goals are you scoring versus how many should you score. He's had a positive number. He's been at the upper echelon of attacking midfielders and wingers for every season that he's been in the Premier League. This season, he is in the 9th percentile, which is abysmal. It's awful. So if this wasn't just a blip in the radar, I would say he's just someone that doesn't finish. But I do think that he's having that kind of young Wilf syndrome, if you will, where he just feels like he needs to take the game over himself and he's trying to do too much. And having Wharton on the pitch with him to be able to open things up, having Munoz now being able to show his kind of attacking prowess, I think that's letting Eze settle into the game more. I mean, unfortunately, he didn't have his shooting boots on again over the weekend, but with Wharton back, with these guys coming back, we hope that he can kind of let the match come to him and feel like he doesn't have to do as much. And I think you'll start to see that clinician come back for him.
I'm really, really excited to see the prospect of Eze, Wharton, Chilwell, and Munoz together. Not pu purely because of how they'll interact with each other, but just two different profiles of fullbacks attacking at the same time with a deep lying playmaker. And then, as you say, with Eze, is this kind of very, very creative option on the left that really stands out in terms of ability to drive play and then also to be a good finisher at the club. So, that's taking out even the JP situation. So I think there's a really, really good chance we see a very strong team against Fulham. We won't do previews. We don't do previews on this pod. It's generally not the way we do it, other than a simple look forward. But we wouldn't be doing justice without looking at the Alcaraz goal at the end there, a very scrappy one. But a lot that went wrong there in terms of the build up, and we generally sustained a lot more pressure in that second half. I think that was clear to see even without looking at the metrics. But Pat, I'll just bring you in there. I mean, what did you make of their goal to ultimately win it for the Toffees?
Again, just it's nothing that tactical organization is going to prevent. When they had the pit ball and we were able to organize our back line and our midfield lines. We really didn't let up many chances. This was a free kick. It was probably a poor foul to get the free kick. And just a couple bounces here and there, we weren't able to clear the ball away. I mean, sometimes I think we get too cute in trying to be progressive and play the ball forward when we can just kick it behind the goal and live to fight another day on a corner, or kick it out and you know, fight it against a throw-in or whatever. I think that might have been one of those situations. Credit to Alcaraz for being in the right position, right place, right time to get that ball in. It was a nice kick, but it wasn't something where I look at the defense and say, man, we just weren't doing the right thing. It was just a scramble, if you will.
Yeah, it was a real shame. I mean, to be honest, I think the way we played, it just feels typical Palace. It is the Palace way, some might say, against an Everton side that always seems to get the better of us in the long run. Minus a few exceptions, of course. But look, I mean, Carly Alcaraz, he's just brilliant. I mean, I was a big fan of that signing, to be fair, from the start. I mean, I was really impressed that he carried that Southampton team when they looked down and out a few years ago and obviously couldn't save them, but nonetheless put in some really good performances. I mean, I'm particularly thinking against Arsenal in that very, very high scoring fixture that they had a couple of years ago. So he seems like a shrewd acquisition, to be honest, on loan on a bit of a trial period from them. But this isn't an Everton pod, of course. So as much as I like him personally, obviously just gutted in the way that he took his chance against us. A real sucker punch, but plenty of chances to bounce back, although we won't really have the time to talk about it. But it feels like our season is pretty much over in many ways, other than this cup run. So Max, I just want to bring you in for some closing thoughts before we wrap up on where this leaves us, because we've squandered chances against the likes of Fulham, Brentford twice, Everton twice, and so on. I mean, it's another season of mid-table mediocrity, isn't it? And how long is that before it becomes too much?
Well, it's everything that Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, that's all that's been going on into it over the past, especially over the past few weeks, but I think mainly since the Everton result, because I've mentioned before, on here, I think it was the last time us three were on here together, that every team in the bottom half we have to be beating, especially when we are now getting our players like Wharton back. Those games are not negotiable on points. Everton was a game that we had to win. Okay, yes, Moyes has come in and transformed the team. I don't really think anyone was expecting him to not do this. I don't know if that's an unfair comment, but for me personally, when it was starting to come out that, you know, Moyes is going back to Everton, I was thinking Everton are going to kick on now, because there's no way under Moyes Everton are not going to be transformed. There's no, with all the connections and the fact that Moyes is still a top quality manager, that was going to happen. But we should have won the game, and I just think that's the bottom line of it. We did enough, apart from the final product, to win the game. And once again, it's Palace not being able to finish our chances in order to take the points. We could have won the game in the first half and we didn't, and it's typical Palace. However, I'm going to take a Pat type of view on this one, that we've got Millwall in the cup next. Fingers crossed that goes our way. I can't think of reasons why it wouldn't. And then there could be a bit more optimism within the fan base, I think. Am I right in saying that after Millwall, it's one game and then Wembley?
Semi-final, yeah. Semi-final, then yeah. Wembley. So just to come in, Max, on that, like, you're totally right. A South London derby win would mean the world to the fan base on our own patch. And then, you know, you're in the quarterfinals and suddenly you're within breathing distance of Wembley. I mean, when you look at the teams still remaining in the competition, there are very, very few that we just blanket cannot beat. It's nuts. I think if there's ever been a chance to go on a big cup run, it's now. We might not get another chance like this for the next 10 years. And if we're fucking serious and we want to buck our ideas up and do it, we do it. This is all we've got now. Let's accept it. We squandered our chances, even against teams whereby we perhaps wouldn't traditionally win. Like, you know, I'm talking Man United at home, Newcastle at home. These are other games where, you know, we came in as underdogs and outplayed them off the park, but struggled to get all 3 points in the end and had to settle for draws. That's a bit harsh because, you know, they were very, very good points. But, you know, it's things like this where if we were a little bit more clinical, just that 10, 15% more clinical, or we spent on that extra player or two, it's like you don't know where we could be. It's all speculation, of course, but I'm just saying that this culture of apathy is a bit of a rot. Pat, I'm sure you wanted to give a more measured view.
We're nine points behind eighth. Eighth will probably get you into Europe. Points behind eighth. Nine. You guys are acting like we're about to be relegated. We are 9 points behind eighth. We play Fulham soon. That's a six-pointer. I don't understand what the doom and gloom is about. I'm trying to be quick. I know we have to wrap it up. I have no idea what the doom and gloom is about. We're playing well. We have the best manager we've ever had since Sir Steve Coppell. We're playing well, even when we're losing, we look good. Get behind the fans. I'm from the United States. The owners are all about the team. That's all they care about. If the fans don't show the owners what they want, they pick the team up and move. You guys have passion. That's the reason I love Palace so much, because you had the passion. You got behind the teams when we were down. When Wat we were about to be relegated to Watford, and we scored two goals in the last 3 minutes of the match to go up and win that one with MacArthur's goal. That's why I love Palace, because of the fans. And now you guys are giving up because you're mad at Parrish for not buying Sainsbury's. Get over it. We're doing fine. I'm not happy about it either, but let's protest Parrish how we want to. Don't take it out on these players on the pitch. They need us. The reason that they're not winning is not because they're not playing well at home with their metrics. It's probably psychologically, because they know that the fans aren't getting behind them like they used to. We need to do better. I'm sorry to say it. I wish I could fly over. It takes me 9 hours to get there. I would love to. If I had all the money in the world, I'd be there every weekend. Yeah, like, keep it short, but let's not do this. We are doing fine.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm as frustrated with the culture of apathy as much as anyone. I think particularly the home atmosphere was a big topic of discussion. But in terms of where we are, like, I've been put in my place there, haven't I, Pat? Like, we are only 9 points off. A lot can happen. We need results to go our way, of course. But I think the coming games are going to really define our season when you look at who's in and around us. So I think it's at least fair to say for everyone, whatever your viewpoint is on the matter, whether listeners as well, this is. It's far too early to call this, and the picture is going to be clearer after that period. That's when we should be saving our meltdowns about apathy then. But, Max, I just want to bring you in because I wanted to give you a chance to have any closing thoughts. I mean, did you have anything to add? I mean, even the talk about the specific about the HF was something that caused a lot of controversy on Twitter, but a lot of fans seeming to think they've lost their kind of will to drum up and they've lost the kind of benefits that we had when we had them at their best at home.
I don't know. I mean, I'm someone that can't, or like living in Sheffield now, I'm not someone that can go down to Selhurst as much as I would like to, especially as a student as well. Like Pat was talking about how much money it's for him to come over from America, and it's, as a student going down to Sheffield to Selhurst, it's a lot. And I don't go down as much as I'd like to, but when I am there, yeah, okay, maybe the HF aren't as loud as they used to be. But we still have that core fan base that will make noise every single home game that other teams don't have. And I think people might like to mention the fact that the home atmosphere isn't what it once was, which is fair. And I don't think it's a ridiculous comment to say. And okay, maybe that does have something to do with our home form. But I'm going to agree with Pat. Why don't we just support the team and focus on what's left to play for in the season? 9 points off eighth, which should get us European, should get, well, I say us, the team European football. That block, though, I will say, that block in between us and that pushing for European spots is so tight. And I think a lot of those teams around there probably have more quality than us. Like, look at the way that Villa have just reinforced, for example, and they're, what are they currently in, eighth, ninth, something like that. So yeah, I'm kind of on the fence. I maybe don't hold a view as strong as others, but I just wish maybe Twitter was less. Like, I hate going onto Twitter after games and seeing I retweeted something the other day, about shouts for Glasner. And it's like, I don't understand how fans can watch that game after Everton and think, oh, do you know what? Glasner's the problem. It absolutely baffles me. I do not understand it. And I feel like every club has a small section of fans that are, I'm going to use the word, deluded, and just come out with just utter bullshit at times. It is true, but every team has that. So, yeah, coming off the back of what Pat said, let's look forward rather than back, and let's push. Hopefully, we've got another, I don't want to jinx it, but we can push forward to a Wembley opportunity. The cup is, as you mentioned earlier, really is what we are. I'm not writing off the league, but that's where the fans' focus is. That's where there's a real opportunity for the first time in years, where we can push on, especially with what there's two of the big six left. Two Man United teams, and then outside of your big six, you've got big six, or whatever you want to call that these days. We've still got Newcastle. We've still got Villa. Now we've proven we can grind a result against Newcastle. We've beaten Villa this season. It's possible. I wouldn't like to draw Newcastle, if I'm being honest. I think that's probably the team that is the biggest worry that's left, apart from Man City, because of just who they are.
Yeah, like it's a huge opportunity, and as I mentioned earlier, this cup run is critical. I think it's regardless of your stance on the league, it gives so much to the fans in terms of hope and expectation, which is what we dream of. That's what football for fans are all about. So I mean, it remains to be seen what happens there. But look, we'll close it on a bit more of an optimistic note by saying that I think the cup run is genuinely exciting. This derby against Millwall is huge. Fulham, a bit of a bogey team, I know, but I think we've got a really, really interesting makeup in our squad now. I think there's a lot of positivity we can go into that game with based on how we play. Admittedly, it will be a tough game, but I mean, I'm really interested to see what happens there. I will be in Oslo, so I will not be on the next pod to talk about it. But listen, Jens, it's been an absolute delight having you on. Max, any closing thoughts?
I've got a big decision to make. I was meant to be going to Doncaster Races on the 1st of March, so I'm not gonna lie. If I can get a ticket, I don't think I'll be going to the races. I cannot possibly miss that. No way.
No, that is very true. I mean, to be fair, an early kickoff is a bit of a shame, but I don't think it will really affect attendance or anything. I think people are going to be bang up for that. So yeah, really, really excited to see how that goes. I mean, would you really go to the races over Millwall? And actually, what's one thing I want to ask before I've had over to Patch? You've got a nice Amsterdam scarf though, I haven't seen in the past. Have you been over recently?
I do. I've not been over recently. It actually just it used to be somewhere else in my room. It's just that I've moved it there. But no, I've been twice. Absolutely loved it both times. I haven't been to an Ajax game yet though, which I will be doing next time.
I go over to Amsterdam quite often for work, you see. So I'm trying to maybe one day I'll take some extra time off or something and go and try and get a game because it looks like an amazing ground to go to. So
Oh,
no,
it
I've just got me
is.
thinking. Anyway, Pat, really good having you on as well, mate. Thank you for your impassioned speech. I feel like you were channeling something there, something you've been wanting to get off your chest for a long time. But I mean, you put me in my place, certainly. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still want us to just buy out Sainsbury's and get on with it. But I mean, that's sort of knee-jerk frustration. I think in terms of where the season could go, I think we don't know yet if you really step back. So thank you for your comments more at large as well. And yeah, anything you want to
Yeah, no, all love, man. I want him to buy it too. I think that we can get behind the guys a little more. That's all. We'll see what happens with Fulham. First match against Fulham at Selhurst this season. We kind of similar to this Everton match. We played with them pretty evenly for the first half, maybe even a little better. And a last second before the half error, that one was by Lacroix, scored a goal for Fulham. And the difference in those two matches was we were in an injury crisis a little bit, and the second half we didn't have the guys to bring on. We didn't have Eze, we didn't have Wharton, we didn't have obviously Chilwell. So very similar match. But that being said, I think at full strength we have the ability to play with them. They've looked really great. Silva's done a great job, but I think there's reason to be optimistic. I think that we can give them a match. And considering the fact that we have had better points totals earned away from home for 10 of our 12 Premier League seasons, I'm kind of happy this one's at the Cottage. So we'll see what happens.
It's a good time for me not to live in London, honestly, because there's so many good away games in the Midlands and the North I can get to. It's great. Yeah, like you say, I think plenty of reasons to be positive going in. And I think if there's one thing I'll end on that's an optimistic note, it's that the thing I love about this club most is unlike any other time I can remember being a Palace fan, with Oliver Glasner, I truly believe we can beat anyone on our day. There's not a single team I fear at all. Even the bogey teams, even your Evertons, where I said I'd bet my house on losing to them, which we did. But you know, it's not the point. I never go into any game with that loss of belief, and I certainly believe we can push on from here if we really pull together. So thank you again, gents. But like I said, absolute pleasure. I'm off to Norway to forget about this silly old club that gets in my head far too much. But listen, thanks again for everyone that's listening at home. Real, real pleasure as always, and thank you for your support. If you haven't already done so, please leave us a review on wherever you're listening. Anything and all things are welcome. We can be one star, five star. You can say what you want. You can say I'm a posh twat, and I'll totally understand. Just nothing about Yanks, please, because we love Pat on this pod. But anyway,
Those two can sell. They can sell the club. We can get somebody else. We can get somebody to put money into it. I don't claim them.
good man, good man. Of course, for socials as well, you can find us on X at the Palace Way, and you can find us on Instagram with the same handle too. We are on TikTok at the Palace Way Podcast as well. We'll be trying to do a bit more going forward with that too. That's one for me and Bruno to discuss after this podcast. But we'll very much be looking to do more good stuff on socials too. So make sure you're following us, make sure you leave a review. And as always, up the Palace. Thank you for your support, and we'll see you next time.
Up the Palace.